Welcome, everybody. This is the jail study committee, as you, I think, all know. And we are going to be taking public comment this evening, although we have some other business we're going to attend to for just a short period of time, and then we will get to the public comment. If you wish to speak during the public comment session, there's a sign-up sheet in the back of the room. There's also blue sheets. If you could fill those out, and we'll have them come up here, and I will call you in the order that you hand the sheets in. So let's begin. Anna Kellis, can I call on you?
Absolutely. I just wanted to introduce, as some of you may have heard already, we've asked Stuart Friedman and Paula Ioannidis. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it correctly, Paula. Your last name? Okay.
Close.
To report to the community, the legislative committee group, the jail committee group. We're aware of a community coalition. This is for a background a little bit for the CGR group. There's a coalition that was formed a couple years ago, and it's reformed, aligned with the work that we're doing. And that brings together a bunch of community groups, including Surge and Catholic Workers. There's some professors. There's a whole coalition of groups. And we reached out to them and asked if they could send to representatives that are experts in the field that could give us some background on what's been discussed among the community group, because they've been meeting now for a couple months, so it would help connect them with the committee. And again, for CGR, for background, Dr. Paula Ioannidis is an associate professor of comparative race and ethnicity studies at Ithaca College, and she specializes actually in some of the work that we'll be reviewing in mass incarceration and increased poverty resulting from neoliberal policy shifts. So I thought it would be a perfect person to come present as we're initiating this process. And Stuart Friedman actually is new to this area, but has been doing work in mental health and drug abuse services since 1974, and has worked in the United States and China.
More directly into the microphone.
It's just
not very loud.
I'm like 2 inches from it. Is that better? We have a tendency, if we speak too close, it starts to cut out. So thank you for letting me know. Stuart is recent to the area, but he has been working and is a specialist in programs for mental health and drug abuse services, and has done community outreach work with actually prisons, with police groups in China and the United States, incorporating mental health services and drug abuse services into the system of incarceration as an alternative. So I thought he would also be a wonderful expert to initiate this process. And I'm going to turn it over to both of you to present your thoughts.
Yeah, before you begin, Jim.
Thank you, Rich. My sense of all it, are we going to be following the orange agenda?
Yeah, we do have some. You're right.
I'm not trying to stall the meeting. One of the things I think that would work is if we followed the agenda, that all the people around the table identify themselves. There are people here who I have never seen before, some I know, but it makes sense, I think, if at least the people around the table identify themselves.
I think that's a good idea, Jim.
Okay.
And we do have some minutes to approve. It's going to be riveting legislative moments. Martha.
Well, since Jim raised the agenda question, I thought, and it says on here, public information and comment after the presentation, which usually, I mean,
Martha?
That kind of makes sense that people, they can make a statement at the end or ask questions or both, but it seems like it would be helpful for them.
This is not the CGR presentation that Anna has just introduced.
I understand. Okay. You started out sort of saying we'd have public comment as soon as this.
Oh, I apologize. We are.
Okay.
Yes. I'll jump ahead. We're going to hear from our guests. And we'll then have about a 15-minute presentation from CGR, our consultants that are helping with the jail study. We will then open up the public comment. But let's follow our agenda so we're all legal here. Any changes to the agenda? Anna, do you want to propose one?
I guess that I am to have two community members to speak for 15 minutes. My understanding from our previous communication is that this would be sort of a pre-meeting. It has turned into a meeting from a confusion of when this meeting is actually starting, which was intended to be 5:30. This was going to be for the official meeting. We were going to have 15 minutes of a presentation from our community members and then start the official meeting. So since we're all here, it seems to be the meeting is starting officially. It looks like we're wrapping it into the meeting, so I'm officially asking to include this pre-CGR presentation from our community members.
Do you have a second? Arthur, second. All in favor? Thank you. Approval of minutes. We have our October 20th, 2016, October 27th, 2016, November 1, 2016, November 17, 2016, and December 15th, 2016 minutes. Do you move?
I would move all five.
A second? Thank you. All in favor? There. Okay. I don't believe we have any unfinished business to pick up before we go. So let's add our new business from the change of the agenda.
So we can introduce ourselves, I guess.
Am I on? I am on.
Excuse me, sir. I was listening to Anna, but I couldn't hear all the things. So my sense is I would love for you to tell me your name, where you're from, and the whole thing. And you also, if you're going to talk.
You got it. My name is Stuart Friedman. I'm a recent resident here in Tompkins County, moved in sometime this August. We are absolutely delighted to be here. We plan on living and dying here. Our son and daughter-in-law are here, which is what drew us here, and what a wonderful place to be. For the last 40-odd years, I've provided mental health and drug abuse services, mostly in Vermont, but from 2006 to 2014 was spending 3 to 6 months a year in China helping them develop mental health and drug abuse programs. So I'm not really an expert about what happens here, but, you know, the problems faced here with in criminal justice are not really different than what are happening many other places around the country. And Tompkins County was a leader in some early efforts at trying to head off some of the negative consequences of those changes with the establishment of things like drug courts and some fairly comprehensive alternative to incarceration programs. But those early efforts, things have changed, and those early efforts are no longer adequate. So now it's time for those of us living here to kind of examine, well, what has changed and what kinds of things are necessary in order to be able to comprehensively in a long-term way kind of address the problems we're facing in criminal justice. So what's changed? Well, inequality in society has increased tremendously, and actually it's hit particularly hard here in Tompkins County. According to the Population Reference Bureau, from 2010 to 2011, Tompkins County was the 18th in the country, the 18th county in the country in terms of growing inequality. So there's lots of literature to support how inequality leads to all kinds of social, legal upsets in communities. At the same time, and perhaps not coincidentally, that this inequality was growing, the federal and the state governments have actually tremendously retreated from providing support for needed services in communities. I was involved back in the early 70s in deinstitutionalization of the state hospital in Vermont, and we all, as clinicians, we all said, oh, we can do better treatment in the community. And then the politicians, you'll excuse me, said, well, yes, but we can also save money. And we sort of agreed with them, and that really was a mistake because it actually cost more money to provide decent treatment in the communities. And our federal and state governments have retreated from supporting those services at the same time that they've closed down the state programs. At the same time, so what we're left with is the situation with the two really broadly based functioning entities and communities are the schools and criminal justice system. Those are funded, and those are working, and those are serving lots of people every day. And more, we're asking those two functioning entities to do all kinds of things that we wouldn't have dreamt of asking them to do 40 years ago. Everything from free lunches to all of the social problems that criminal justice is forced to deal with as a result of these changes in social policy. So most tragically for people with mental illness, this has been the most serious problem. I don't know particular what we're looking at here in Tompkins County. I can't believe that it's different than it is elsewhere, but probably somewhere between 50% and 60% of your people you incarcerate have a diagnosable serious mental illness. In Vermont, we had 70% of our people in our prisons were on major psychotropic drugs and not actually getting provided very, very much treatment. So that's sort of the background. Now, what is to be done? Well, I think it's time for Tompkins County, for those of us who live here and who care about our community, to redouble our efforts that were started 20 and 30 years ago in response to the changing environment in which we're faced. It's not like it was 20 years ago. The system of courts has been addressed in a magnificent report that was published this last summer. I'm not going to go into that. That's sort of out of my bailiwick. But some of the things that we can do is address the problems that we're essentially dealing with. How many people in the jail up on the hill there are people of means? So essentially we're running a jail system for poor people. And the bail system really makes those things more difficult for people, because if I have a $100,000 income and you're asking me for $2,000, I can do that. But if I have an income of a tenth of that, it's sort of out of the question. We need to find a way to minimize the use of legal sanctions to solve social problems. We've gone down the road with there are domestic violence courts, there are DWI courts, there's a youth court, there's a drug court, there's proposals around a mental health court. Why are we using all of these courts for solving what are essentially social problems? I think they're the least bad solution that we have at this point, but they should be seen as transition and find a way to bring these kinds of problems back into a social context and leave law enforcement to do the kinds of things that they do best, and they shouldn't be burdened with having to solve these kinds of things. One last question. I was in the drug court last week, and there was a young woman there who talked about how she had to go to Syracuse in order to get her medication for her drug treatment. So she was running to Syracuse, a couple times a month. These services need to be available to people here in the community. It's really not adequate to have to go that sort of distance. So I'm getting signaled. My time is up, so I'm done.
We could be here all day, but I only have a few minutes. My name is Paula Ioannidou. I'm an associate professor at Ithaca College, and I am a researcher in prison issues, both nationally and at a local level, which means that I've kind of tried to wrap my head around the really complex system that we're dealing with and the complex problems that they raise, both for legislators, community members, and, of course, for the people most directly affected. And I want to speak specifically to the local issue that we're kind of confronting right now. And I would say that we're at a moment of crisis. We're at a moment of crisis in part because the variance was pulled, because we're dealing with an overcrowding problem, because now the State Commissioner of Correction is expecting something of Tompkins County to deal with that problem, right? So in a sense, that crisis was produced, but I would say that it's an incredible moment of opportunity if we look at it, if we choose as a community to look at it that way. And the opportunity here is for Tompkins County to actually be a path-breaking leader in the nation and in New York State, to essentially continue doing what it's been doing, and what it's been doing at a rate and at a path in a way that many counties in New York State have not chosen, which is the path of actually, funding, implementing, and running alternatives to incarceration programs that essentially leave the footprint of incarceration smaller, and in our vision as community members, shrink it, right? So we're really looking at a process that rather than punishing and containing the social problems that Stuart just talked about, which are primarily having to do with poverty, with mental health issues, with people who have drug substance abuse problems, that rather than punishing our way into those problems and cycling those problems back into our community, because most people who go to county jail will come back and will continue to cycle in and out of those problems. What the research has shown, right, and now I come to you as somebody who's been researching these issues for over 10 years, is that the punitive policies don't work. In other words, containing people back into jail only disrupts their cycles and their opportunities for essentially reintegrating back into the community in sustainable and healthful ways, right? That instead of punishing and containing our way out of this problem, what really works is to deal with the root cause of the problems, right? Whether that be drug substance abuse problems, whether that be mental health problems, whether that be affordable housing, whether that be jobs, education, and so on and so forth. Now, what I really want to encourage us to do as a community and you as this jail study committee and as legislators is to imagine the possibilities, right, of what it means to actually, instead of expanding the footprint of incarceration, shrinking it and moving towards alternatives to incarceration that are community-based, right? And what I mean by that is that is a vision, and it's a harder vision to implement, and this is what I really want to kind of put our finger on, is that the bureaucratic pathway of setting up a bigger and you know, a bigger jail or expanding the current jail that we have looks like a simpler, more direct solution, right? But essentially, it will lead us back to the same problem in a just kind of a delayed fashion, right? Whereas what alternatives to incarceration do, they're harder to imagine, they're harder to implement, they're harder to develop the infrastructure for, precisely because there isn't sort of a straight path there. That's my baby crying, by the way. But what it does in the long run is address the root problem, potentially address the root problem so that it doesn't keep cycling back into having to address it again in just, you know, another 5 to 10 years. Now, we as community members are extremely excited and extremely willing to help offer a vision for these alternatives, and as well as the people power, right, to implement them, right? And it is essentially we're hoping that our taxpayer dollars will be used in this way rather than the punitive and sort of the containment, confinement of incarceration way, which we already know from 40 years of a massive prison system that it doesn't work, right? We also hope that you realize that these are deeply problems that have much to do with poverty as well as racism. Studies have shown, our own data has shown, that the rates of incarceration for Black and Native people in this county are much higher than for whites. We've also shown that although the largest police beat in Tompkins County is College Town, that Cornell students and Ithaca College students don't tend to be the ones in jail. Right? So there's a disparity in terms of who ends up in jail. And finally, what I want to say is that we have some very concrete proposals that have been articulated over and over again by the people who are most directly impacted by these processes, right, of going in and out of jail. The first is the need for, and as well as public, police officers and many judges have said, right, one is the need for diversion programs, right, which means that currently we have nowhere to put people who just need to go into a emergency detox center, but who could otherwise be sent there and not jail if that facility existed, right? This is people with drug substance abuse problems. We also need emergency mental health programs, right, that also have a diversion program for people who are going through some kind of episode but have nowhere to go in the county health mental health system, right? Those are very implementable. There's both the capacity, the infrastructure, and the willpower to do it. And I hope that it is our great hope as community members, and as you'll probably hear tonight from many other public speakers, right, it is our hope that you hear the community in charting that pathway forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir, if you have a card, you can bring that up here if you want to speak. And anybody else? Okay. My name is Rich John. I'm the chair of the Jail Study Committee, and thank you for coming. And before we begin, I also wanted to thank our local press for publicizing this meeting. We really got great coverage, and it's borne out by all the people here. This is what we wanted, and it's good. I'd like to introduce the rest of the committee. We have Martha Robertson, Anna Kellis, Jim Dennis, and Dave McKenna. We also have some guest legislators. Mike Sigler and Dooley Kiefer is here. And we have several county department heads. We have Frank Krupa, the head of mental health and the health department. Joe Mariana, our county administrator. Patricia Buchel, who's the director of probation. Captain Bunce, who is responsible for the jail. And our sheriff, Ken Lansing. So let me just also introduce, where are they? Hiding over here, we have Don Pryor of CGR and Paul Bishop, and they are going to be giving a presentation. It'll take about 15 minutes, and then we'll spend the rest of the meeting. And we have Will Burbank as well, another legislator here. So this is well attended. But we want to devote the majority of the time we have tonight to hearing from the public. I do have some opening comments. I promise they're brief. The Jail Study Committee is a temporary committee of the legislature, so it's going to serve its purpose and then evaporate, hopefully, and hopefully quickly. The purpose of the committee is to study this specific question of how do we manage the jail, and what do we do about the specific issue of the variance being pulled by New York State. Obviously, this is a very important question from the standpoint of money. There is a lot of money at stake in the decisions that the legislature makes. But it also is a very important question from the standpoint of societal interests. How we run our jail is really a reflection of a lot of what we see ourselves as a community. And the decisions on that level, I think, are just as important as the money decisions. So we are very sincere in saying we want to hear from the public on this issue because it is a community decision we're going to have to make. And I would just mention we have a website. I don't have the address in my head, but if you go to the county website, you can keep track of what we're doing. We also have meetings that are open. We've been taking comment from the public at our meetings as well. So if you remember something really important after tonight, you're not closed out from coming and speaking with us. I also want to say that the committee has not written its report. We have made no conclusions, and we are trying at this point to listen and learn. So don't feel that we are coming at this with any set agenda. We really want to keep open minds here. We hired CGR in December. They are a consulting firm out of Rochester, New York. They have over 100 years of experience in consulting on governmental issues. And we've asked them to help us to look at population trends in the county, to see where we think our population is going to be in the future and what our jail needs might be as a result of that. They're also analyzing the extensive alternative to incarceration programs we have in operation now to try to determine are we running them efficiently? Is there any more efficiency we can get out of them? And are there other things we can do, such as there's some possibility of a detox facility opening up and what impact that would have on our jail population? CGR has not been retained to look at construction or design issues with building the jail. If we determine that there is construction necessary at our jail for any purpose, that's a second phase, and that will be treated entirely separately. Right now, we're just looking at trying to determine what are we doing and what do we think our needs are going to be in the future. As you know, the jail operates with a variance of that allows us to put 18 bunk beds in the jail, essentially. So we have a total capacity of 82. Without the variance, we're down to 64. However, you also have issues of what's called classification, and Captain Bunce can speak to this a lot better than I can, but classification is you can't have men and women in the same cells. You can't have adults and children in the same cells. If somebody is, frankly, violent, they have to be isolated. If they have a mental illness issue, perhaps they need to be protected, so that functionally you're really at about 80% of that 82 beds. So there's a lot of issues going on within the jail of how you can put people there. If there are more people in the jail than we have beds for, we board them out to adjacent counties, and that solves the immediate issue, but it takes the inmate out of their community, away from their families, their lawyers, and their support systems. It also costs a lot of money to board out inmates, both in the cost to the other county and in transportation costs. So it is not ideal to be boarding out. We have a temporary reinstatement of the variance. So we are working with New York State. And part of the reason that they reinstated the variance is because we formed the jail study committee and we agreed to look very hard at this issue. We are going to have to give a meaningful response to New York State at the end of this process. And so doing the job right, getting the input, is critical to doing that right. So, again, I'm very glad that you're all here, and let's get started. I'll turn the meeting over to CGR at this point.
Thanks, Rich. Again, my name's Don Pryor. I'm just going to say a couple words of introduction and then turn it over to Paul, who's going to walk through a presentation. First thing I wanted to say was just appreciation for many of you in this room that we've already met with. There will be others that we will continue to meet with, but people have been extremely cooperative, and we've already begun to learn a lot just in the first month and a half of this study, both from a data perspective and in terms of a lot of very helpful conversations that we've had with many people representing a wide range of perspectives in the community. So just want to say thanks to everybody who's been part of that. And the second thing I want to say before turning it over to Paul is, and it sort of Rich kind of alluded to it, way too early for us to have anything close to conclusions on this, except that I think the one thing that we can say, and it sort of references two or three things that have already been said in the comments so far, is I suspect that it's fair to say that one way or the other, the outcome of this is going to involve some investment on the part of the community. Whether that's investing in a new jail or an expanded jail, renovated jail, or whether it means adding on to some of the programs that already exist or creating new ones. Way too early to make judgments about what those are, but I think the community realistically needs to think in terms of investing additional resources if you're really going to solve this problem other than just putting Band-Aids on it. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Paul. He's going to walk you through a presentation and then open it up, as Rich said, to your comments.
Thank you, Don. For the legislators and those of you part of the jail study committee, this is going to look very familiar. This is similar to the presentation we made as part of our interview process. But for the public in the room, some of this will be new, and this is an overview of our approach to this project and what you can expect from us. We're based in Rochester, New York. We've been doing consulting for local governments for over 100 years. Don, in particular, has been involved in criminal justice studies for more than the last two decades, where he's been working with different communities, analyzing what's working in their community and what needs to be done there. We're familiar with legislation in New York State. We're familiar with the rules here, and we believe those will all benefit Tompkins County as we go through this process. Our project team is led by Don. My name is Paul Bishop, and our colleague who is not here with us today is Pete Nabosny. But between the three of us, we are the ones doing the bulk of the work on this. We're the ones writing the report, conducting the interviews, analyzing the data, and getting the input from the community, which is an important part of this process. Just a little bit of context of where you are. Tompkins County is already a leader in having a low percentage, a low population incarcerated per 10,000 residents, looking at your peer communities. So you see where Tompkins is kind of over to the right there. We didn't grab some of the larger counties. We tried to get the ones that were close in population to you and those that were near to you, and you see where you compare to some of the communities around you and those that are close to yours in size. So given that the low jail census, what is the project goal? We're trying to help you identify ways to reduce the average daily census. We want to help you eliminate the board outs because those are expensive. If an expanded or new jail is needed, look at cost-effective recommendations that limit the size and the cost. And also, as you're doing this, what are you going to be doing with the additional square footage? Is it something that can be used to provide additional programs that you're not able to do with the footprint that you have today? Our goal is to be on site frequently. We've had four visits since December 1st. We have more to come. We've been doing extensive interviews. We'd list all those we've met with, but that's four or five slides that would take up right now. We're taking a look at all the studies that have been done in Tompkins County related to your criminal justice system, related to your jail. You've already done some very good work. You've harvested the low-hanging fruit that we can often turn to in a community. So you're making our jobs harder, but that's okay. That's what we're trying to do here. So we're doing a thorough review. We're meeting with the players. Again, as Don mentioned, there's a lot of people around this table that we've spent time with. The meeting, reviewing their information, reviewing their programs, learning about them, trying to get a good understanding how everything works, whether it's the alternatives to incarceration, whether it's the jail physical plan itself, whether it's the mental health programs that are available to the community. We're trying to learn what's going on here. We're going to be reviewing the relevant state legislation, the regulations, the policies, in particular the Commission on Corrections. They have a pretty strong say over how many people you can keep and how many square feet. So if you want to, or the community needs to have a change in that footprint, you have to work with them. So we need to get an understanding of what their expectations are. So we're taking a look at the jail population. I'm not going to read through all of the bullet points. This slide presentation we'll put up on our project website so everyone can take a look at it. But this gives you an idea of what we're looking at. There's an awful lot of data that is tracked by this community already. It's required by state mandates. And we're diving into that, trying to get an understanding of who is spending time incarcerated, why, what are the patterns, are there things that we can see. Are there people who are in the jail on a repeat basis? What might be causing that? So we're trying to take a look at that. We also want to take a look at the boarded out inmates. When a resident of Tompkins County is boarded out at another community, they might not get the services that you would like them to be able to receive in your county. So we want to be able to take a look at what's going on with that issue. We're taking a look at what's going on with the arrest trends, changes in charges, conviction data, taking a look at what's going on with the criminal and antisocial behavior. Everyone that we've met has mentioned that there's an increased problem in the last handful of years related to opioid abuse and the crime that's related to that, people committing larceny to be able to sustain their habit. So what's going on around that? Is there some intervention that we can look at to help in that area? What's going to happen with the population of Tompkins County? What are the reasonable projections in the future? What's the trend going to be? Talking about what's going on with the economy as well. What do we anticipate happening there? Taking a look at the ATI programs, how many of them are impacting actual jail stays, so where they are truly the alternatives to incarceration as opposed to a different kind of sentence that person is receiving. Taking a look at the variety, the portfolio of programs that are available, are they being used properly? Are different courts using them one way and another court might not be using that particular alternative? And is there a way, if we can get the courts to be using them in a similar manner, that it would increase the efficiency and increase the capacity of those ATIs. what is the realistic impact of all the alternatives on the jail census? It is exceedingly doubtful that we would ever get to the need of a zero jail population. Perhaps, but I'm very skeptical that we'll ever get there. So how low can we go? And we want to be able to work. What are those numbers? Are there things that we can do and recommend and your community can do to help you get as low as you can go? And where will that be? Will that be below a point where you are today? What are the staff, space, and cost implications of different programs and how they impact the jail? The jail has let us know that there are things they'd like to be able to do, but they don't have the square footage to conduct some of these programs inside their four walls. So they just can't offer them because they don't have the space. We're looking at the trends and numbers and types of cases that are being prosecuted by the DA. Looking at the charges, how the courts handle them. We want to look at opportunities for processing efficiencies to reduce times at various stages of cases. Are people being held in the jail when they could otherwise be released because a court doesn't meet for another 3 or 4 days? As sometimes happens in the towns, they're not meeting on a regular basis. Are there system efficiencies, changes in practices that we can suggest that will help you, the system, criminal justice system, work more efficiently so there doesn't become a bottleneck? As we look at all of this information, our goal is to distill it down for you and be able to make some recommendations. Our focus is on how to limit the future number of jail cells needed to meet the realistic needs of the county, looking at average and peak demands, looking at classification requirements and the different regulations. We're going to be looking at the trends of the jail census and the needed jail beds at 5 years, maybe 10 years out. For all the options that we're going to provide, we're going to look at the potential value. What are the public safety implications? The staffing and space considerations, looking at the costs. What is the timeline? Is this something that we could start overnight, or is this something that's going to take 3, 4, 6 months to develop, or maybe it's a year or two down the road before we're really going to see this program being in effect? And there's different initiatives that are being floated around. There's been talk of the need for substance abuse rehab, detox facilities, reentry programs. What are those impacts? What are the impacts of those programs, and when will they be working at their highest capacity if they're not already there? So what's our timeline for this? We're working with the Jail Study Committee. This is their meeting. We're reporting to them as we go along in the process. They're helping us identify all the different people in the community that we should be talking with. They will be receiving a draft report first, asking questions of us, allowing us to refine it, and making sure that we come back with a final report that is going to be of value to the committee and to the community as you move forward. Our goal is to be able to have something to you in June, but time frames are always targets, and it depends on different obstacles that might show up as we go along. We also, in addition to our report that will come out, sometimes Don and I feel like Dickens, that we get paid by the word, so there's a pretty lengthy report that will come out. But there will also be a focused executive summary, something that we want to be able to be distilled down with the key findings that the community can pick up and digest, something that's easily readable. And I do want to, Chairman Johns mentioned the website. I've got the URL up here. It's cgr.org, Tompkins, Crim, Just. And just to give you an idea, maybe it will let me go there. It has the background of the study, the meeting schedules, any documents that we get, that any interim findings, things that reports that we share will be published here. There's an opportunity for you to get involved where you can submit comments or questions to us, If there's things that are directly related to CGR, we'll take care of them. If it's something that needs to be referred to the committee, we will do that. You can also sign up for electronic notifications that will let you know of any community meetings coming up, and also whenever we publish documents to the website. And that is our presentation.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay. Now we're going to get to the fun part. Oh, yeah. Why don't you? Yeah, let's get the screens out of the way.
So before you do that, Michelle, I'm sorry. Paul, could you go back to the website and show us what it's on the links? I saw you had links there. And
I can. Let me. I was quick closing down here. Hold on one second.
Is that, is it reports about?
Oh, there. Okay.
Okay.
So it's really websites related to the jail, county probation, and the CGATI committee. If you feel there's other things that we should have up there, also under documents, we have some of the we have the background of our total proposal, but we also have some of the recent Tompkins County studies that we've been made aware of. So from the 2014 Jail Alternatives Task Force and the CGATI Reentry Program are both linked.
Thanks very much.
Yep.
Do you have the RFP?
Got it? Okay. All right, we're going to raise the screens and Anna?
Do you have the RFP also up on the website?
Yes, we do. Yep.
The request for proposal will lay out what the county is asking them to do, just if you're interested in seeing that, and that is on the website. If you wish to make a public comment, you should fill out a blue sheet if you have not done so already. There's a list of things you're agreeing to in terms of being polite and professional and making the comments. You'll have 3 minutes to speak. I ask that you come to one of the microphones, state your name and the town, village, or city where you live. If you're not finished in 3 minutes, we're going to use the clock. You'll hear a beep, and I just ask that you wrap up as quick as you can after you hear that, if you're still talking. Martha?
What about questions, and will there be
getting to that.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I hadn't forgotten. Instead of just receiving comments, we want to give you the opportunity to ask questions. I'd ask that they be factual questions, and we've got a lot of brain power in the room. We can try to answer them. I will moderate and try to hand them out to the people that can give you an answer. That answer might be, I don't know, or we don't know yet, but we'll try. But we want to try to provide as much information to you in response to just, and not just listen. But if we can answer a question, we'll try to do that. If you ask a question during your time, it's not going to stop the clock. If you want to leave the question, we can try to answer it when you're done, but we'll do our best. So let's start. Joel Harlan, you can come up.
My name is Joel Harlan. I'm from Newfield. I've been to places when I was, a few years ago, I've been traveling around the state. I get ideas, I bring it back to this community that's making other areas work. It can work here. So I've seen the new jail at Oswego, New York, built. It's a 200-bed with the county courthouse built to the jail. So you don't have to transfer back and forth. You just go right in the county courthouse and go right back to the cell. Now I'm going to speak because I see it all the time, and you guys just don't see it. You got to make programs, because it's getting out of control, and these drug and alcohol treatments and mental health is not working. I'll give you an example. Go to the Friendship Center. You guys never show up there, or the soup kitchen, but you don't see what's going on. They're all the time hauling people out that's drunk and abusive and argumentative, that wants to fight. They want to panhandle you to death because of the drugs and alcohol. They're in and out, in and out, in and out, all the time, out of, in and out of jail. And when they get back out, they get worse. They'd rather go to jail this time of year because it's cold. They'd rather prefer to be out doing their thing. I've known for a fact, even with a drug court, they rifle through the system, think it's funny. They are sneaking their drugs and alcohol, and they're getting away with it. You guys got to observe personally. You got to become a street rat to get to see what the street rats are really doing. A lot of it's mental illness, and it's hardcore drug addicts or alcohol along with mental illness. You're not going to stop the treatment unless you do something. You may have to lock them up for a year or two because they'll wander off and get a drink. They'll do anything for that drug. You got to control them. You got to make them sit down and realize what their lives are turning into. I don't know how much more they could take with the Friendship Center. The neighbors and the businesses are just about had it because there's too many cops down there. There's too many fire department, too many ambulances. A couple, two or three drug overdose deaths. They died.
Okay.
You know, they see it all out there, and it's going to be where we won't have a Friendship Center or a rescue mission down there.
Okay.
Because
thank you.
It's coming. Because nobody does anything. And it's hard to control it, and it's out of control. So I'm letting you know it's coming.
Okay, you know, Mr. Harlan, if you could wrap it up.
You've got to save lives because it's going to be a stabbing shooting or an assault that's going to, someone's going to die, and you just guys don't want to see it. You don't want to be around it.
Okay.
You
thank
know, you got to participate personally
okay.
down there or in the soup kitchens because they're all drug addicts.
Okay.
A lot of them are drug addicts. And
you're over your time. You're
that you're
time.
Not seeing.
Okay. Sherry Cortheis? Cortheis? And Ruth Yarrow is on deck.
Hi. Hello. I'm Sherry Cortheis, Ithaca. I want to thank you guys for forming this jail study committee and for studying the expansion. But I would like to say that I'd like the I'm against the jail expansion, as it was the last jail expansion. So I'm hoping that with all the public input, we can point you in the right direction, or we can sort of work in that direction, is not to expand, because I don't think that the jail, I've said this before, is not a conducive place to have drug addicts and alcoholics having to go through rehab. I mean, being thrown in there and having to go through withdrawals and then going from door to door, you know, from the jail to the rehab, and they're kept in there until they can make it to the rehab. But anyways, I'm going to leave some documents. An article that I'd read John McCain wrote in 2014 where he was very upset because Ithaca received federal funding for the SWAT truck. And he said, it's the most secure small town in America by Farmers Insurance Group. So in Ithaca is considered the most secure small town in America. We would like to see more information on detainees. I was going to supply that to you guys. We get a lot of charts and graphs, but I don't know who's in there, what their names are, what they're in there for. You know, why are they in there? How long are they in there for? Did they get bailed out? You know, that's all supplied. I moved here from Columbia, Missouri, so that's why I know this. So I checked their county jail stats, and I was going to leave those with you. We did a jail expansion in 2014. They did a new jail, had a new jail expansion approved, and they finished it in 2016. So my question is, that was supposed to solve our board out, and it cost $910,000. But we also don't know what the overruns and stuff. I don't know the final cost of what happened with the jail. But they did finish the project, so we do have the 7 beds that they put in the indoor facility and then move the indoor facility outside. So I'm sure the state has some issues with that. So I'll leave that with you. There's an asset forfeiture issue that I've brought up in the past. Just up through November, we already have $1.4 million in the asset forfeiture account. I've got it back through 2013, and it's always over $1 million every year. So I don't know if you guys can do something with that money to help. And also with the mayor's new Ithaca plan, he says decriminalize marijuana. We don't want our people arrested. We are still arresting people for marijuana and putting them in jail. And that has to stop. And the civil rights issues, you know, where they can just stop somebody if they smell of something in their car. They can search their car, take their car, you know, put them in jail. And that's covered under the Constitution. You know, it's just under the Constitution. But that's all I'll say for now, because I will be back. And thank you so much.
Thank you. Ruth Yarrow and Ellen Shapiro is next.
My name is Ruth Yarrow. We raised our family here from the late 70s to the late 90s. I've returned because my children and family are back here. I'm volunteering with a fleet of people from OAR to drive families of people who are incarcerated up to the jail. What I hear from those people, and they are important stakeholders, is not what you might expect, that they're worried because the jail is overcrowded, but that they would like more programs, programs for drug addiction, for mental health, for training people for jobs when they get out, all the kinds of alternatives that we're talking about. So my question to you is, do you have a good way of reaching these important stakeholders? These are the families of people who are incarcerated. They need to be heard from, and they feel strongly, as do I, that a new jail, if you build it, they will come kind of thing, and that we need to really work on alternatives to incarceration. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Elon Shapiro, town of Ithaca, and showing up for racial justice. And I'd like to say that I really believe from examples that I've read about and heard about from people that if we put together enough of the pieces that are diversion programs and alternative programs, it's possible to very dramatically reduce the number of people in the jail. And one of the things that, I mean, we're obviously saying a lot about detox and about mental health. I haven't heard yet about bail reform, but in some places, just changing how much it costs to get bail can dramatically change that. You need to fund it some other way, but that's a key piece of it. But what I want to talk about briefly is that there's a long history of restorative justice efforts that kind of rises up and then it becomes less popular, but it still has a long-standing way of diverting people from jail by putting it back in the community. The idea is not just that you're looking at what do the victims need, but you're looking at how do you create reconciliation between the victims and the offenders in a way that benefits the community. And it's very labor-intensive, but a lot of it does not require the criminal justice system. A lot of it is community volunteers. A lot of it is jobs that are not very high-paying jobs, but that staff can do. There's a history of it in Genesee County near Rochester. It's not at its peak right now, but it's still going. It's called Genesee Justice. And for a long time, it was major diversion, preventing people to have to go into the jails by having citizens working out together what's a fair way to make amends. It's obviously more complicated with, you know, violent, extremely violent crimes, but there's a big place for it for a lot of minor to medium crimes that I feel like we should have that, because we're the perfect community for it. We have tons of people with the skill sets to make it work, and I really want to make sure we put that into the mix. The other pieces are just as important, but let's not forget restorative justice.
Thank you. Phoebe Brown and Edwin Santiago is on deck.
Hey, good evening, everybody. Really glad to see such a turnout. Hi, Dr. Mead. I come here today wearing many hats, but first I'd like to just share an experience of my own. The 28th of this month, I'll be 19 years clean, right? The reason why is because at the time, CMC had a detox center there. I don't know what happened and why it's not still happening there, but 19 years ago, I went there, and they did door-to-door service. I went to a treatment facility. I don't know if that's what I would have wanted if I was locked up. I think I would have wanted to just sleep, right? So what I really hope we can talk about is making sure that, because I know the appeal is, like, if we expand this jail, we can put a treatment center in there, and we can do this, and we can do that. But I think it's real important of thinking about what to do in the community also. We have some great alternative programs in this community happening now, and as Sajati, it's been happening for some years. However, we need programs that are not punitive, the alternative programs. We need community to be more involved in their families and friends who's going in and coming out. And we need to really be realistic and say, why are people going in, right? We need to not sit here and just talk about how we're going to find ways and means to keep them locked up or to make sure that we need to talk about why. Why are people going to jail in the first place? There are some systems that's already not in place. And that's not really talked about in a lot of these rooms. And I think that's really the conversation. Because we have left out, there's some things that's not in place. There's some people without jobs. There's some people who are living in conditions that are putting them in the conditions to be incarcerated. My last and only question, and thank y'all so much for even doing this. And I also want to say to this group here, we're paying y'all to do this, and we expect an excellent job like y'all doing. I'd like to also ask, are there people of color working with you in this study? Right? Because it's really important not to just, because the study is not, but what it says to me when you have someone of color working with your team is that your eyes and ears is everywhere. Thank you.
Okay. Edwin Santiago and Cruz Colon is on deck.
My name is Edwin Santiago. I'm from Freeville. As an individual that was locked up at 16, I didn't learn nothing in jail. It was back in and out. Jail wasn't the solution. It was never the solution. I changed out here with people helping me. If you don't have the resources out here, you're going to keep going back in and out of prison. You don't want you open another prison, guess what? They're going to fill it. They're going to fill it. They're going to find individuals. They're going to propagate and put people in there. There's a lot of people that have mental issues. That's the issue that should be helped. If you're using drugs, it's an issue. It's mentally. There's resources out here. Help the resources out here that need the funds to help these people. You're not doing that. I'm 50 years old. I'm sick and tired of going back to jail. I've been out 8 years. I've been out 8 years because I ain't trying to get up, go in there. I'm trying to help people not to go into jail because that jail's not the solution. Because they come out, the families are impacted, the children, the friends, you know, the people, come on. Jail is not the solution. You got no, you learn skills in there, you can't utilize it out here. You can't find a job. So how the person's going to be a productive citizen if you keep putting them in jail? I am a reform. I'm a reformative society builder. Understand? Because I am changing my life. And anybody that I come to and mentor, I want to change their life. That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Cruz Colon. I really don't have that much to say. However, I do want to speak in my behalf, my experience. I was also in drug court, and the drug court did the trick for me. No, it didn't. It actually made it worse, you know, mentally. What really helped me was my father. He's a pastor. He's also a psychiatrist. And, you know, I was locked up, and when I came out, I didn't, you know, figure out how I was going to get financially stable. I didn't want to go back to the street and hustle, you know, because I have made people suffer by doing so. And I have realized, you know, my father opened the eyes for me. And expanding the jail really doesn't do the trick. You know, it's just it's going to give more power and more people are going to fill those spots. Somebody got to fill it up. And, you know, more laws, people are going to break laws regardless. The thing is that we should invest the money in programs. You know, a lot of people can't afford a psychiatrist or a counselor, you know. Half of the people can't even get Medicare, you know. So a lot of people tend to go back to the old habits. And me being part of the URL, we're trying to prevent that. We're trying to help people and see other ways. Now, you know, a lot of people are working at a minimum wage job. As we all know, nobody can afford nothing with that, you know. I had to leave college. Well, I didn't leave. I had to leave a semester because financially I wasn't stable. I had to get a second job. It was either that or, you know, lose my house, my apartment. I have kids, you know. So I don't want to bring that to my kids. So I stopped, you know, and I'm searching for help. And the resources out here are great, you know. But a lot of people can't fit in those programs because it's already packed. So instead of, you know, expanding jail, we should definitely put that money towards the community. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Kate Cardona is up with Jay Beckley on deck.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kate Cardona. I live in the city of Ithaca, and I think that this is a really important and great opportunity for Tompkins County to be a leader in stepping up and showing that we can build alternatives to incarceration. As other people have already spoken to, there are a lot of really powerful models that exist for doing this, and to be able to do that in our region would be setting a really great precedent for other communities nearby. I think that especially right now in this political moment, so many people are thinking about the huge issues with mass incarceration, that it's really a civil rights issue. It's something that this community is deeply engaged in right now. Study groups on the new Jim Crow, people looking at the huge race and class disparities that exist within the prison system. And it's extremely clear that the inhumanity of that system needs to end, needs to shift, needs to transform. And just want to encourage you all, as other people have already said, to really center and listen to the people who have firsthand experience with jail and prison, and listen to and center the voices of people of color and those who are most impacted by really the brutalities of this system that is the opposite of rehabilitative and is completely unsupportive to human needs and human rights. So definitely am in opposition to the expansion and hope that you all will be too. Thanks.
Thank you. Jay Beckley and Roberta Wallet up next.
Hi, my name is Jay Beckley. Rich, thanks for a great article. It was very evenly written and helped get me here, and for you guys doing the study, appreciate that. Just want to qualify some experience really quick. I have some wicked bipolar 2, also diagnosed with ADD, OCD, a touch of Tourette's, lifelong alcoholic and drug addict, currently in recovery. I've been arrested at least 8 times that I can recall, spend time inside a number of jails, including extended stay in Susquehanna County Jail, all involuntarily, I will add. Let's see. I have been at, I've also been, I've spent 2 extended stays in psych wards, also involuntarily, one in New York City Metropolitan Hospital in Havenwick. In Auburn Hills, Michigan. I have been at DSS, the Syringe Exchange Program in Ithaca's shelter, downtown and Southside Community Center and the Public Library, today as a client at all of them. I'm also a loving father of 3, a 10 and 20-year-old girls, and a son who was killed at 5 years old. I'm a graduate of Ithaca College. I have a master's degree. I had a successful 25-year career in advertising sales. 10 years in publishing in New York City, 15 in Michigan, including 10 at Yahoo as a regional vice president, where I built and led a $100 million business, was awarded their highest global honor. I'm a member of Nation Outside in Detroit, which is dedicated to reducing mass incarceration and providing service and support to the recently released from incarceration. I raise money for a number of organizations like the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Detroit, Southside Community Center here, and others that I come across. Because of my experience, I go to corporations for funds because they can write bigger checks, and I'm comfortable going in there and doing that. My interests lie in connecting cool people, helping to amplify what I view as sound efforts, and general redistribution from abundance to need. And I've been coming to Ithaca since I was 16 years old, since I got my driver's license. Spent the last 20 years in Michigan raising a family. Ithaca's got abundance out the butt. And in programs, people, in process, I'm not even talking dollars, that I think should be exported to other places. And when I read in the article that this is 4 times lower than the national average in terms of incarceration, I became excited in that area as well. And I just would like to make 3 points. One, I'm going to raise my hand now to help raise funds for alternative funds for ATIs. I would urge everyone here and in the community to listen to what Stuart, and I believe it's Brenda, had to say, because from my experience, they're the real deal, and what they're talking about is stuff that works. And impacts are, you know, offers opportunity for real progress in our community. Give me 10 seconds.
Yeah, wrap up.
And lastly, I would like to submit that, you know, we're going to hear, I think we already have arguments, adding a jail is going to cost money. Let's take that money, spend it on ATIs and other type programs. I would submit that even if other ATIs and things are not funded through this council, that a jail not be funded as well. I think that would force a community such as this to use our resources and come up with alternatives that would benefit this community, and I mean everybody in it, from those in need to civilians, legislators, civil servants, responders of every kind, on up through corporations and universities. So that's all. Thanks.
Thank you. Roberta Wallet and Khalil Bey is up next.
My name is Roberta Wallet, and as a retired teacher, I am constantly thinking about what we could be doing in our community and in our schools to prevent people from getting involved in the criminal justice system. And it has broken my heart over the years to see the names of my former students, who I knew to be smart and capable and creative, and reading their names in the monitor. And so it has been clear to me that our systems are not working. When children that I knew when they were 6 and 7 year olds end up being adults who are imprisoned. So I am glad that you're looking at demographics, I would like you to add a demographic of people who have grown up in Ithaca to the, and looking at the people and then thinking about what got those people imprisoned and what we should be doing as a community to make sure that that isn't happening here. And, you know, potentially, I mean, I keep working on the school district side. We have failed children as a school district for many years, and it's not all children that are failed. We know who the school district works for and who it doesn't. And so the school district is one place, and the rest of our community, really, what are we doing to make sure that our children are not put on that path? Thanks.
Thank you. Khalil Bey and Aislinn Kolgar, if I'm pronouncing that right, on deck.
Yeah. Good evening, and thank you for pronouncing that right. My name is Khalil Bey, and I work with the URO. That's the Ultimate Reentry Opportunity. I am a mentor coordinator, which we help people that are recently released from jail and prison situations. Personally, I feel that building a better jail is just a frivolous idea. I think the jail should be a dirty, funky place that would make a person not want to ever go back there, right? I think the emphasis should be on preparation for employment. People should, you know, a man always feels better when he works and he brings home that paycheck. It makes him stand up straight. It makes him think positively. Otherwise, he's going to think if he can't get a job, a man is going to feed himself by hook or by crook. The idea is that we should prepare them. Let them know this is not a place where you want to go. This is a place where you want to stay away from. So in order to stay and become a productive member, a transformative society builder, you should work. Work is the key. I think employers who are predominant here in Ithaca should go up to the jail while they're up there and interview people who could be potential employees. They can see for themselves. And that way, we won't have to worry about that little box. Have you ever been convicted of a felony or a crime or what have you? You go into the jail and see. And a person would present himself through a preparation. We would like to come into the jail and help prepare people so the expansion would be a frivolous idea because it's spending a lot of money. We could use that money in other ways and stuff. But I do believe that work is the key and the affordability of work. I think also that the glory of the king is the welfare of his subjects. So if whoever is leading the community, then our community concerns should be our concerns. And to straighten out the crooked places in the way, that should be our responsibility. And I spent a number of years in prison, and I know for a fact that it's not a place where you want to go. It's not going to the Bahamas and vacationing, that's for sure. And a lot of people are coming home, young guys I know, I talk to, are coming home thinking that, yeah, I was up in the jail, man, and I was getting busy up there, man. I was, you know. Some of them are really dependent. They get three hots in a cot, you know what I'm saying? And a man's got to stand on his own, I believe. Once the men stand up, they can lift the women up, and they can lift the children up, and the community will be a better place, I honestly believe. Thanks for letting me share that with you.
Thank you. Aislinn Kolgar and Lily Gershon is on deck.
Hi. So I have a couple of questions and then a couple comments. One question I have for CGR is just to get some clarity on who you're meeting with, and is there a way to share that with the group so we can, or with the community, so that people get a sense of the spectrum that you're being, that you're, whose opinions you're being exposed to? Because I think that it is pretty significant to get the voices from people who are most impacted by a jail expansion. That would be the people who would be put in the jails. Another comment I guess I would have would be looking into no bail. I know that seems like a pretty drastic option, but some people were saying it earlier that essentially the bails are set so high that only poor people are not able to meet them, and that if we were to eliminate bail or dramatically reduce bail in the county, we could potentially reduce the population by up to 60%, according to some numbers that came out of last time we were studying this jail expansion. So I want to put the idea out there of eliminating bail or dramatically reducing bail. And I want to just, I guess I have a question because I don't really know if this is going on, but I have an assumption. In Ithaca, the town and the city of Ithaca have been massively gentrifying, meaning the rents are going up and poor people can't live in this town, and they're being pushed to the outer municipalities within the county. So places like Newfield, Enfield, Groton, Dryden, and all of those places I'm sure are struggling with this burden of people who are now too poor to live in Ithaca, and there may be some clashes, and maybe the town magistrates are. I'm wondering what the biases are against the people who are being pushed out of Ithaca and are coming into the different municipalities' judicial systems, and how those biases may be impacting their bail, the way their bail is set, or how they're treated in those counties, or in those municipalities. And I'm wondering if that's something that you all can look at. And then just basically, how can we be investing in alternatives to incarceration at the same time as thinking about building another jail? I think we have to choose one or the other, because it's not going to work if we're undercutting the investments the county has already made in alternatives to incarceration if we're going to try to build another jail.
Thank you. Before you start, you had a couple questions. We'll try to address those. One, I would just speak to the bail issue. Bail is set by judges and justices. So the county doesn't really, certainly the jail doesn't have control over bail. There has been an effort to do more release on recognizance. Lance, did you have something you wanted to say, or are you just wondering where I'm going? Yeah. Yeah. We do have, OAR does a very good job with bail. They post bail for inmates that can't make bail themselves, but the judges have the rights to set bail as they will.
But that's
also for misdemeanors. And felonies, yes.
They won't post bail for
felonies. Oh. Okay. Right. I mean, there are limits to what OAR is allowed to do, but we do what we can there. And did you have any comment?
We're certainly happy to share a list of those we're interviewing. My thought would be to share the names of the organizations of people we've met with rather than the individuals, but we're happy to do that.
I think it's fair to say
we'll put that on the website.
It's a full spectrum review of organizations and people in the community.
And I would just add that we are very open to any suggestions that any of you may have, and you can submit those also on the website if you want, or perhaps through Joe or through Rich. Any suggestions in terms of how to access people who have experience within the system? We've talked with a couple of people about setting up focus group meetings or getting access to some folks who have experience either directly in the jail. We've heard from some of these tonight, obviously, but also family members. We're open to doing that, but we need some guidance from you all. So if people have suggestions about how you can put us in touch with people in a group setting or whatever, we would love to do that. But you all know the community better than we do, so we're open to your suggestions in terms of how to do that.
Thank you. Okay, Lily Gershon. And Katie Cox is on deck.
I'm Lily Gershon. I live in Freeville. And I just wanted to say, first I wanted to say thank you for having this and thank you for looking into what you're looking into. I am against expanding the jail unless, you know, it's absolutely necessary. And I just feel that I want to encourage us to invest our money towards services like mental health services, addiction services, mediation, things that will not only help people who maybe are coming into the jail but could prevent people from coming into the jail in the first place. And I just think that we should look at the long-term effects of where our money is going to go. And I think that money is better placed into those services, and that in the long term, that will benefit us more than expanding the jail. I also do agree with some people that I hope that while you are interviewing people and doing this research, that you do pay attention closely to the voices of people of color and people who are directly affected. And I think that's really important to this community. And I do ultimately believe that there could be a future with no jail. I'm not saying soon, but I do think there is a potential for that future to exist. And that's been something that people believed in the past, too. And I think that, you know, if we can't affect bail directly, I think we can at least complain a lot about that. You know, I think some of us can do that, and to the higher, you know, to the judges or the people who do set that bail. And I think that that's something that we can put pressure on people to change that by saying, hey, well, you're making us spend a lot of money trying to expand jail, or spend a lot of money hiring these guys. Could you lower the bail? You know, because that doesn't, it just really doesn't make sense to do that to just people because they're poor, or having an alternative to actual money bail. I'm sure there's other options for that. As the lady from Ithaca College said, there's a lot of people here in this community who are willing to help create those services and be volunteers and help those services thrive if we do invest money in them, and I'm certainly one of those people. Thank you.
Thank you. Katie Cox and Marietta Sinodis is on deck.
Hi, I'm Katie Cox. I'm Town of Ithaca. I'm sorry for interrupting you there, but it's an important distinction between felony, getting bail for felony and misdemeanor. There's a much greater need for people with felonies to be able to prepare for trial and actually get out of jail to do so. But I apologize for interrupting you. I have a couple of questions, but maybe I'll make a couple of comments first. I'm wondering if we can include or find a way to look at the punitive effects of a family member being incarcerated, right? Because a lot of times when someone goes to jail, the more punitive measure is actually on the family. So we're disenfranchising families and children. And a year later, my husband was arrested. We have not recovered financially. We're completely destabilized still a year later. So I'm wondering if there's a way to add that into this report and really think about that in terms of how punitive do we really want to be on people, and how much do we want to be locking people up versus diverting them. And the other thing is, I'm wondering how you're defining public safety in this study, because I believe that really some of these bigger issues are much larger public safety issues in terms of poverty and racism in our community. Those are huge. We have a nice median income in Tompkins County, so things look really beautiful, but for a lot of people, they're struggling. And we're talking about very punitive things that are already happening in the community, right? Poverty is punitive. So if we can think about adding some of those things into the study, and then the question is just, how are you defining public safety? Thank you.
Thank you. Marietta Sinodis and then Barbara Reaganspan on deck.
Very few people get that name right, so thank you very much.
Just luck.
I'm Marietta Sinodis, and I'm a resident of Freeville. And thanks to an awesome local organization, the Multicultural Resource Center, who's hosting a community-wide reading of the new Jim Crow, my eyes have been opened to the many, many issues and challenges that are surrounding mass incarceration. And just this past Monday, another great organization, URO, the Ultimate Reentry Opportunity, facilitated a really, really powerful simulation for the whole community over at Beverly J. Martin, where they gave us an idea, a true true. Not a true, but they gave us an idea of what it might be like to be recently released from prison and needing to get one's life back on track, whether that be getting a photo ID, finding a high school diploma, getting one's social security, food stamps, transportation. And at the end of the event, there was a group discussion, and one gentleman made a really strong point where, when he expressed it, there was this wave of nods across the room of like, oh, yeah. And he said, these services should be available at the prison, at the jails, when before people are released. The ability to get one's ID, get one's social security card, get access to a shelter prior to being released or at the moment of being released. So I just wanted to share that because as we're looking at where to allocate funds, aside from all the other alternatives, for those who are still in jail right now and will be released one day, these services, it makes so much sense for them to be available to them prior to leaving and entering the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Barbara Regenspan and Harry Prine is on deck.
Hi, I'm Barbara Regenspan. I want to speak out of my area of expertise. I'm in phased retirement from Colgate. My area of expertise is in educational studies and very specifically about how people talk about social issues and how people experience conversation about social issues. And so I just want to say that everybody who spoke before me, every single member of the public who spoke before me, is against the building of more jail cells. Now, I want to put it out there because I think there's a way we talk about presentations and then public commentary. And, you know, in fact, you said, and I'm not insulting you in any way, but you said, now we're in for the fun part. And there's a sense that the experts give the talk, and then the rabble comes in and adds their dribs and drabs, and that they're all over the place. In fact, we are not all over the place, and we run the gamut. Look at the content of the social class, ethnicity, and life experience of people who have spoken. We are all over the map, and every single person who has spoken is against the building of more jail cells. Okay? Let's be clear. Okay, then. I don't know which gentleman made a very lovely statement about the fact that you know less about the community than we do. Okay, I think that's a great place to start. When the community decided to take on this issue this year, what did the community decide? To read the Michelle Alexander book, The New Jim Crow. The community decided that the overwhelming issue related to incarceration is racism. So my question to you, who are saying you don't know as much about the community, is why aren't you reading that book first? Why isn't that book the umbrella of all your comments? Tompkins County is going to fight racism, and we are going to fight it by proving that you don't need jail cells. You need excellent education. You need excellent available detox programs. You need decent housing for everybody. You need a fabulous world-class school system. And you need a program to multiply jobs. You know, that it's not rocket science. Thank you.
If I could defend myself for a moment, I wasn't being facetious. This is great. This is great. This is really helping the committee. We want to hear your comments. Okay. We have Harry Prine.
Yes. Thank you.
Louise Bailey is on deck.
My name's Harry Prine, and I live in the city of Ithaca. And I'm proud to be on this side of the microphone and with people speaking against this jail expansion. We were here before, and the legislature voted to spend $1.5 million to expand 7 beds. I'm glad that this time, and they did that, and here we are again. And that was a poor choice. At one time, Tompkins County had a smaller jail than it did now, and it could be that again, and it could be even smaller and smaller than that. We knew that the state would pull the variance then. If you make a bigger jail, you will fill a bigger jail. Every county around here has had smaller jail populations before, and every county around here has built larger jails, and they filled those larger jails. I don't often take the side of, like, a police officer or a corrections officer or something like that, but I do believe that police officers and corrections officers are spread thin in what they're asked to do. They are there with a security mindset. They are not mental health providers. They are not drug and alcohol counselors. They are not paid to do that. They do not have the training to do that. We do need more programs, like we've been hearing. We need more programs that bring people in. Most of the crimes that happen, they're not happening because the people committing them are dangerous. Actually, most of the crimes that are happening aren't even being criminalized. People are not even being brought up on charges. Corporations that get tax abatements, the city that continues to allow rent to be raised, that continues to take away transportation from people, that continues to displace families out into the surrounding areas. Those are the criminals. Those are the ones that are not appreciating their families and their people, the strong community that is here and appreciates each other and deserves to be able to stay and deserves to be able to decide their own futures, deserves to be treated respectfully when asking for a smaller jail, to be looking at different options. Crime can come from many different ways, but one sure way is to make someone poor. For a city to not support, to not bring a living wage into fruition in this county is ridiculous. There is so much abundance. There is so much money here. There is so much here that could make that happen. For a city to keep its residents from having proper transportation into work when jobs are not paying their employees proper wages, crime happens from that. When you can't get home at the end of the day, when you have to stay somewhere else, who knows what kind of situation you might end up in. You may end up criminalized. It's the city that is not supporting its residents. I'm proud to be on this side. Thank you.
Thank you. Louise Bailey and Jesse Goldberg is on deck.
Thank you. My name is Louise. I would like to say that Ithaca has been good to me. I came here 10 years ago, and just accepting life on life's terms. I am a former inmate. I was incarcerated back in 92 from Carlisle, Pennsylvania, and I was able to relocate. Now, I have talked to a lot of women that's coming out of prison. They would like to start their lives over. They would like to relocate. The authorities is telling them no. The probation officers is telling them no. They're keeping them stuck. So how can they move forward? Now, I am a part of URO. I am a mentor. I would like to save women's lives because I've been there. You know, just listening and talking to an individual, everybody's story is completely different. So I said to myself, what can I do to give back? How can I help? This is what I would like to do. Who can I talk to? I would like to go to these prisons and talk to young mothers that are coming out and tell them what they can do, who they can go to get help. The Women's Opportunity Center here in Ithaca, New York, helped me. Helped me get jobs, gave me clothes for interviews. We just need more programs for people that's on the outside looking in. You don't know. You don't know what's going on. So I'm here to say, you know, let's give it a chance. By incarcerating women and men, I'm good with women. And I know I can save somebody's life just by listening to them. Thank you.
Thank you. Jesse Goldberg and John Paul Meade is on deck.
Thank you. My name is Jesse Goldberg. I'm from the city of Ithaca. I have one comment and two questions. So my comment would be I wanted to say that I really appreciated the opening frame that we got from the chair of the meeting, that there's a money question here and there's a societal issue, and that there are these kind of two strands. The only thing that I would want to offer as a comment is to kind of reframe those two strands as a single strand around this question that's repeated about imagining a society that doesn't have a jail. The difference between the statement, I can't imagine society would ever get to the point where the need would be zero, versus the statement, I'm imagining that a society could get to the point where we could see that. And I think a way to think about that is that imagining, that thinking about the future, it becomes concrete on the money question, right? The societal question is the money question, because how we choose to spend X amount of money, whether it's on a jail expansion or a new jail or alternatives or programs in a jail that already exists, all of those questions are money questions that are societal questions. So I really appreciate that opening frame, and I would just want to tweak it so that we can start thinking about imagining as an actual concrete act of how does X amount of dollars get spent and how does X amount of dollars create a future that we are imagining in the now. So that would be my comment. And then two questions for the folks at CGR. One would be, we've heard from people already during this comment period who have been involved with programs both within the space of the jail and outside the space of the jail. And I'm wondering how particularly you will be looking at the difference in the effectiveness, in the cost of programs that might be seen to be doing the same thing, like drug treatment, whether those programs are happening within the walls of the jail in that square footage versus the drug treatment that happens in a different facility, and how the particulars of how you would examine those kinds of programs, right? And then my second question would be about costs, and it would be how are costs besides monetary costs factored in? And I'm emphasizing the word how there. And I'm thinking about the comment we've already gotten from someone from the community about the cost of families. When one person is incarcerated, if that person is connected to five members of a family, how does that one person being incarcerated cost those other members of that person's family? And I'm also thinking about something like continued or increased racial disparities in the jail population moving forward. If we were to build a new jail or expand a jail, how would that racial disparity, those class disparities that we already see, as Paula alluded to in her presentation, if they were to continue, how would that be seen or measured as a cost? Because that sounds like a cost to me, as a member of a community who wants to not see racism within a system. So those are my two questions, and that's my comment. Thank you for taking the time to give us the presentation.
Did you want to respond to any of that?
Well, just real quickly, I think the cost issue clearly is something that is critical here, and we will be, as we flesh out different options, different alternatives, we plan to lay out the various costs of, you know, what would it cost to do X? What would it cost to expand certain services or whatever? And I think that will have both the dollar and cents implications, but also the other societal implications that you talk about. I mean, to some extent, that's going to be a judgment call. I don't know that we can put absolute dollar signs on things like racial and societal kinds of issues, but we can certainly talk about the implications of those in the context of the various alternatives we'll be looking at. So looking at differential costs from both societal and dollar and cents perspectives is very much part of what we plan to do as we lay out different options and the relative costs and the relative advantages and disadvantages of those different options.
Thank you. Okay, John Paul Mead and Claire Grady is up next.
Hello, thank you for listening. My name is John Paul Mead. I'm a resident of the city of Ithaca, and I was born here, and actually both of my kindergarten teachers were in the room earlier, so I guess I'm one of the kids that did well in the Ithaca district, and I admit to that. I currently am a primary care doctor, and I work in the hospital and the emergency department here in Ithaca as well, and I see things in all three of those settings that relate to mental health and substance abuse and criminal behavior. And I'm here to speak in opposition to expanding the jail cell beds. I'm also the director of performance improvement at the hospital here. So, and I just want to say that these issues affect me on a personal level as well as my patients. I can say that my nephew has been a customer at the jail here in Tompkins County. My brother's brother-in-law has been in the involuntary mental health system here, so these are close to home. And just within the last month, I had a patient who was incarcerated related to drug issues, I believe. And then when he was discharged, he overdosed because he had been detoxed without any advice about how to not kill yourself after you've been detoxed. So so these affect me directly. And my question and offer really is just to say to the consultant group, what can the hospital do and what can the outpatient physicians do to support this nascent detox and rehab facility and to strengthen mental health coordination between the hospital and the outpatient world? I think there are people willing to volunteer and or work hard to help that.
Thank you.
Just quickly, that issue came up in a couple of earlier conversations today in terms of the role of the hospital and how that can be helpful. We don't have necessarily a contact person in terms of who to best talk to at the hospital. Maybe it's you, but we would like to, we'll follow up on that. It's an important issue, and we realize that that's a potential resource. Thank you.
Claire Grady.
Hi. I didn't come planning to speak tonight. I came planning to listen. And I just want to thank every single person that I've heard weigh in tonight, weigh in with their life experience and weigh in with their dedication to not only abolishing prison and the carceral state, but undoing racism. And I want to maybe speak about a few words, the word system. I would suggest that the system is not broken, it's actually doing what it's meant to do. And that we just finished the holiday of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, and he identified the triplets that we are enslaved and ensnared by. And the triplets are, if you don't know them already, racism, militarism, and capitalism. Extreme materialism, and they always work together all the time, and you don't separate them. So when we had emancipation in this country in 1850s, 1860s, immediately black men were criminalized for not having a job and standing on the corner looking for a job. That, thanks to my teachers that have taught me that, so that has to be part of the situation. There is no solution to decreasing jail population unless it is included that we make amends for the systemic crime of enslaving black people in this country. And we could go on, but that has to be part of the solution. We are never going to be liberated from this question. We'll be recreating this conversation all the time until we do that. So this system has to be changed, and we need those big, big views. I want to say the piece of militarism. So thanks to everyone that identified this system of greed, the capitalism that commodifies people. And thank you, Katie Cox, for naming it, for saying, what is public safety? And Harry, it's like, we're letting the big crime
of stealing trillions go unaccounted for, and the big crime of killing millions go unaccounted for. And I believe as a white person that until white people take accountability for that crime, then we will release the prisoners who are basically living on the receiving end of the legacy of the crime that's never been accounted for. That's what I believe. And very, very important footnote. As we probably know, it costs $15,000 to $40,000 to incarcerate a person in the United States. We also know, and you hear this, it costs $15,000 to $40,000 to put a person into college for a year, right? The same amount. You do the math, right? Where is the priority? I want to add the piece of militarism to that picture. It costs $1 million for the United States to militarily occupy other people of color's land. It costs $1 million to occupy the people of Afghanistan's land for 1 year. Let you do the math. So where is the liberation and where is the work? Thank you for all being together. I think we're all in this together. Nobody gets out of here without all of us free.
Hey, thank you. Do any of the members of the committee wish to say anything?
You ask if anybody else wants to.
Oh, does anybody else wish to speak? I'm out of blue cards. Jim?
If I may, I'm Jim Kerrigan. I've been here, lawyered for about 50 years and been a judge for a few. My sign-up sheet's back here, but thank you for letting me come up. I've got a whole fistful of comments I'd like to briefly address, but the one I want to start with is bail. I've set bail. I have heard tonight someone say that 50% of our jail population is in lieu of bail. I'm surprised it's that high, but I'm shocked that it wasn't on the board in the presentation in terms of knowing it. I wanted to start with a county commission that recently concluded its report, and this was the report dealing with the consolidation of the courts. On the last page, or the next to the last page of that report, there was a recommendation for all intents and purposes that bail, it may have been limited to misdemeanors, be abolished. And I would concur in that. It's been suggested that that's not a county function. I would suggest to you that it is a county function in a couple of respects. It's a district attorney's office who gets a county paycheck, I believe. All of the assistants get a county paycheck every week or every couple of weeks, and they constantly appear in front of judges, I was one of them for a while, recommending bail. That recommendation is taken at face value in some courts, considered in others, rejected in some. I understand all of that. I don't see any gain in the 6 years that I was a judge in the city court in having anybody locked up before trial. I've been here for close to 50 years. I am aware in 50 years of one bail jumping prosecution. I'm aware of another one that I think could have been brought, but was not. People who flee having been released on their own recognizance, and that's bail jumping, are few and far between. In most circumstances, leaving and not coming back is far worse than facing the consequences of the charge. And I would like to suggest I would like to suggest that the county, perhaps to the Public Safety Committee, advise the District Attorney's Office, no bail recommendations. Release on recognizance is an automatic recommendation for any misdemeanor. I would like to expand that. I would like to expand that to say that that's true of all E and D felonies. We can get into interesting debates about what happens as the charges go up the alphabetical ladder. But most D and E felonies are resolved in this county, fortunately, without incarceration, unless they've been in jail pending. One last sentence, if I can stretch that. I would like that there be a policy that there be a very substantial reason set forth before any sentence of less than a year is imposed in this county. It does no good. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else in the public who wishes to speak? Right? Any legislators wish to make comment? Mike Sigler.
Mike, please use your microphone.
I understand what you're advocating, and I'm interested in that. I'm just wondering, if the judges have the say-so on whether or not to do bail, why do they set bail?
I think in city court it was relatively rare. I think in some of the other courts it's whatever the DA says. There have been circumstances when I have set small bail for folks because I had no alternative. They were clearly either because of anger or substances, a danger to themselves or others, and I did send them to Warren Road. In city court, they were back in court the next day. The substance had frequently worn off, and invariably they were released in the next day. Somebody else mentioned that some of these courts meet once a week. A week in jail is the end of a family in many circumstances. But I'm going on, and I don't know if that answers your question. The role of the district attorneys, their recommendation is significant to all judges. There were some when I would ask the police officer, who invariably in a felony would appear before me with a bail recommendation, and they would give me the amount. I like to always think I'm right. I think I was usually right, but because before I asked who the assistant was, I had decided who the assistant was. I could pick the assistant and the bail recommendation amount, not by the offense, not by the likelihood that the defendant wasn't going to show up, not by the likelihood that the defendant was going to go kill somebody that night, but by the name of the assistant district attorney making the recommendation. It is, and it should be, a significant factor. Your advice to them, I would think, would be a significant factor, and that's all I'm asking of the county board.
Okay, thank you.
No, I love it.
Okay, Jim?
I saw Lance with his hand up over there, and I would love for you to come to the microphone and make the comments that you're going to make.
Lance Salisbury runs our assigned counsel program for the county.
Just for you kind of got the answer, Mike, to the question, but the prosecutor's input on bail is important, particularly outside of Ithaca City Court, because that's getting given great weight by particularly the town courts in trying to decide bail issues. So that is a significant factor there. It's given greater significance by some town courts more than others, but that is it is relied on heavily by a lot of the courts, what the prosecutor says. Less so, particularly at after-hours arraignments, they may get a call in saying, prosecutor says $1,000, whatever, they'll have that. It can be more important there than sometimes in court, but it is relied on a lot. I think Joe knows it, I think a number of people know this, but in terms of the bail, the district court task force did make that recommendation in terms of misdemeanors on a presumptive ROR that was accepted, I think agreed with, by the county council of governments. The problem is, so that's a community statement, but it's not binding. People, I think, should understand that's not binding on a judge. The county can't tell a judge what to do, for better or worse, on that.
Thank you. Martha?
Jim was for finishing.
Okay. Mark, Jim?
Rich, my only comment, very short. Number one, I appreciate all people that showed up here and expressed their opinions and their directions to CGR and clearly the legislature. I think we have a lot of things to look at, and we will do that. It's very interesting to me to hear some of the same things we heard during the 7-bed expansion. But what has changed is that the county, and I'm not using this as any sort of an excuse for anything, we are under constant pressure by the Commission on Corrections in terms of our overcrowding, and we have to deal with that, and that's what we, why have these people are here, and we hope at the end of the process we can come up with something that will be satisfactory to some. That's the best I can say. But thank you all for coming.
Martha?
Yeah, I want to thank everybody for coming, too. And when we interviewed CGR, we told them that, and actually they looked at the media and knew that this community had protested the 7-bed addition. So we said, well, this is what's going to happen, and you really proved us right, even like plus about 100 people or something. So thank you very much for coming. I want to say, I thought that bail reform was on your list of things that you're going to look at.
Yes.
Right. The list went by pretty fast, but it's something that we raised earlier, and I thought it was something that was in your report. I also want to say that when we have asked CGR to look at, to give us recommendations of things that may not be in our control, but that we may lobby for. For example, the Court Consolidation Task Force has recommended a third county court, probably specifically a DWI court. As a county, we don't have the authority just to set that up. That's a state function. But we are, you know, working on our timeline and trying to make a strategy about lobbying for that specifically. So that's just one of the items. We're embedded within a system, federal and state system, but as many of you know, we aren't shy about telling the other arms of government what we think. So those kinds of things will be part of CGR's recommendations as well.
Anna?
I just I wanted to add my appreciation for everyone showing up today, and in particular the person who spoke about the quality, caliber of the 3-minute presentations that you gave today, and the expertise that you all show. And I think that that's very important. You all have a lot of information. There are many people in the community that have done tremendous amounts of research that have already started to share. So I wanted to encourage you that if you are finding articles of precedent, of programs that are creative, it's not just your input that we're looking for, but we're all doing research here, and the more research you share with us, obviously, the easier our job is. So if you have those, share them with us. I encourage that, and I really want to reiterate that the website is a place where we can continue to have an open dialogue. So please do use that, and thank you so much for coming.
Okay. Dave?
Thanks, Rich. I'd like to also thank everybody for coming, and I would like to just say that it's a pretty smart bunch of people in this room, everybody included. But this particular group that's in charge of this study are smart enough to know that we don't know it all, and we'll take any input we can get to help guide us and get an outcome that's satisfactory or reasonably satisfactory to everybody. So thank you all for coming.
Dooley or Will, did you want to make any comment? Okay. Any of the county employees? Sheriff Lansing, do you want to say anything?
No, I think that tonight the voices have been heard from the public. We only want to do what is right and in the best interest of this community. That's what we are here for. And we hope that this study will give us the things that we need. One thing I do like to say is that since Captain Bunce took over the corrections facility, we have done our best to put as many programs that our facility will allow us to do, and we will continue to do that, rest assured. So thank you very much, and we have listened to what you've had to say.
So I will echo what my colleagues have said. Thank you so much for coming in. This was really informative. We have a engaged and passionate community, which is a very, very good thing. We'll carry on, and if you have questions or comments in the future, get them to us.
We want this to be as open as possible. So, and also I want to say in particular, thank you to all the people who came in and spoke who have been imprisoned. It was really great to hear from all of those people today. So, do I have a motion? Anna?
Do you want to pass the minutes from last?
I thought we did that.
Did we?
I think we took care of the minutes.
Sorry, my bad.
Do I have a motion to adjourn? Anna, second by Martha. All in favor? Thank you, everybody.